dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a bit of the battle space of the war for the free world. One of the people who is very actively contributing to that battle space is our first guest, Jamie Fly. He is the executive director of a relatively new organization, highly regarded, in Washington called the Foreign Policy Initiative. He comes to that from various positions, including on the National Security Council and in the Office of the Secretary of Defense in the George W. Bush administration. He is a guy that a lot of people are following closely, I most especially, in connection with a wonderful piece that he wrote on the 27th of August, which starts with this graph. And I just want to read it in its entirety because it's so well done. An economy in shambles, unemployment high, even in double digits in some states, overseas conflicts in Afghanistan and the Middle East, the U.S. military strained by budget cuts, a growing sense that America has abdicated its leadership role, being, in the words of the Republican presidential candidate, quote, unwilling or unable to fulfill its obligations as the leader of the free world, unquote. And an incumbent president calling his Republican challenger a warmonger whose proposed defense buildup would yield more conflict and endanger America. The year is 1980 or 2012. Jamie, well done. Great send up for an argument that we need a Reagan-esque candidate and foreign policy program. Is that what you're seeing down there in Tampa at the moment?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Frank. I hope it is, and I think we'll know for sure after we hear Governor Romney's speech on Thursday. And the reason I wrote the piece was just looking at what the foreign policy vision that Governor Romney has started to lay out. I'd say especially in his speeches during his trip in Israel and Poland, I think it is a Reagan-esque vision for U.S. foreign policy. But I think the major challenge he faces is just building up the courage to talk more about it, because in this election, obviously, all the polls are showing that voters aren't paying attention to national security. They only care about the economy and jobs. And so I think Governor Romney likely has some of his political advisors telling him the less he talks about national security, the better. But I actually think looking at the 1980 race, when I was looking back at how Reagan handled some similar challenges at the time, is then Governor Reagan really embraced the foreign policy critique of President Carter. And I do think that if Governor Romney does the same with President Obama, he can actually end up perhaps winning some votes on these issues.
I couldn't agree with you more, Jamie. In fact, it seems to me that if he leaves it off of the table, that he almost certainly does not have the appeal that ultimately proved really decisive to Reagan's victory, not just victory, but landslide victory over Carter in 1980, among others from independents and even some Democrats, the old Reagan Democrats. I believe they're still out there, and they're certainly disenfranchised at the moment. The question, I guess, is, and Jamie, you have been, I know, following as closely as one can from outside of the process. What is going on with respect to the platform that the presidential candidate Romney would be running on? What do you make of it based on what we know at this point?
Well, it's hard to tell exactly because the platform, I guess, has not been released yet formally. There have been various drafts floating around on the internet put out by some news organizations, but from my understanding of what happened last week during the actual platform committee markup of the text, was it was quite positive. And I think it actually the platform, as far as these platforms go, actually is very Reagan-esque. It lays out the case for a strong military, reversing the cuts of recent years and preventing sequestration, and also paying more attention to our allies and to really to actually dealing with our enemies, not engaging them as Obama has spent most of the last 3.5 years. So at least the bits and pieces that I've seen make me very hopeful that again, this is a sort of Reagan-esque message that I think Governor Romney has also embraced.
Yeah. Our guest again is Jamie Fly. He is the executive director of the Foreign Policy Initiative in Washington, D.C. We've caught up with him on the margins of the Republican National Convention in Tampa. And Jamie, just on that point, one of the issues that is arising, it seems, within the platform debate and elsewhere for that matter, notably through a presentation that Grover Norquist made at the Center for the National Interest last week, in which he, maybe the week before now, in which he rather directly attacked Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan for their efforts to, as you say, reverse the draconian cuts being made in the defense budget, especially if this sequestration train wreck eventuates. What do you make of the internal fissures or, you know, possibility for fratricide even within the Republican Party on these questions at the moment?
I think there's some potential for that, but again, what I heard from the platform committee proceedings last week, I think attempts by various delegates who are supporters of Ron Paul to water down the defense sections of the platform were all voted down by the committee. I do think that what you're hearing from some of the Paul supporters, as well as people like Grover Norquist, perhaps they're becoming more vocal because they realize that they've essentially lost this battle within the Republican Party. Senator Rand Paul supposedly claimed in a speech he delivered at his father's rally on Sunday that in his speech to the convention on Wednesday, he will call for auditing the Pentagon. And so I'm sure you'll hear some of those cries from Paul supporters that Republicans should be willing to cut the Pentagon just as much as domestic spending. But I think, again, you look at where someone like Paul Ryan, who is supported by a vast majority of the Tea Party, has been on this issue. He has actually called for increasing the defense above the proposals of President Obama. He's passed, a budget through the House that would fix sequestration. And so I think there's a growing consensus within the Republican Party that we actually need a stronger military to deter future threats and to deal with current challenges.
Yeah. Well, Jamie Fly, your work at the Foreign Policy Initiative, along with the American Enterprise Institute and the Heritage Foundation and a broader coalition that we've been working with you on called the Coalition for the Common Defense is deeply appreciated. And I hope you're right that the correlation of forces is now demonstrating that these, well, I think of as kind of neo-isolationists are being rebuffed by the Romney-Ryan ticket and by the platform that they will run on in this fall's election. Jamie, can I switch gears just a little bit? I spoke yesterday with Corey Shockey about the concern I have, and I think numbers of us do, that democracy may or may not be a reliable means of enhancing our security in places like the Middle East. This is a somewhat neuralgic point because, you know, many of us have hoped that it would. What's your take at the moment on what's happening in Egypt, what's happening perhaps in Syria next with Libya and elsewhere where the popular sentiment seems to be in line with bringing to power people who are very hostile, not just to democracy, but to us, notably the Muslim Brotherhood?
I think there's certainly some things to be concerned about. And I guess if you look at Egypt, my fear is that because of how the early transition was handled by the military and by our lack of effective action to use the very significant leverage we have with the Egyptian government to ensure that there was a level playing field for a variety of political forces. So groups like the Muslim Brotherhood obviously started with a leg up given their social networks and their activity amongst the populace, and a lot of the secular opposition, which had originally been behind the revolution, I think just could not compete. And so whenever you have that sort of situation, I think we do have to be concerned about extremists taking power and then subverting the system. That's the real question, and I think we've seen some troubling signs thus far from the Brotherhood government, although I would say that it's not, I don't think, entirely clear that they have, for instance, you know, committed to no future free elections or that they are intent on revoking the peace agreement with Israel. And so I think those are key tests we need to see how they develop. But my general fear with the way this administration has handled things is we're not really a player. And I think if you had a more effective U.S. government that was willing to assert the kind of leadership that, you know, President Reagan certainly spoke about, what Governor Romney started to speak about, I think the landscape would be very different. And it's a similar situation in Syria. I think the longer that we remain on the sidelines, the less influence we're going to have in the aftermath in dealing with some of these extreme elements that are trying to advance their agendas in South Syria.
Jamie Fly, this is a subject for another day. We look forward to visiting with you again soon. Good work down in Tampa and at the Foreign Policy Initiative. Keep it up. We'll talk with you in the near future. Next up, we'll be talking with Roger Noriega about the latest out of our front yard, Latin America. Straight ahead.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any other junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
We halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined once again, as we have the privilege of being, with some regularity, by Roger Noriega. Ambassador Noriega formerly served as our representative to the Organization of American States and as our Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs under President George W. Bush. He's currently a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and the driving force behind a terrific resource, InterAmericanSecurityWatch.com. Roger, welcome. It's always great to have you with us. We have been visiting with you, it seems, week after week for months now on kind of the soap opera, really, of Hugo Chavez's medical conditions, his electoral prospects, his conduct both at home and within the region. The latest in this drama seems to be a rather severe setback to an oil enterprise, state-owned enterprise, that wasn't in very good shape to begin with. Tell us about this explosion at an oil refinery, and what does it mean both within Venezuela economically and perhaps politically for Chavez?
Well, it's been revealed in recent weeks that they've been having to import gasoline, as a matter of fact. Here's an oil-rich country that has to import gasoline. And this explosion on the peninsula of Paraguaná, of the fifth largest refinery in the world, has killed 40 people and injured another 150 at least. Obviously, the lack of maintenance.
And blown up some neighborhoods in the surrounding areas, I understand it.
It's absolutely. A lot of civilians killed. And it's been revealed today in El Nuevo Herald in Miami that the folks running PDVSA have been aware of the deficiencies, the safety deficiencies. 100 small fires, for example, in just the last year at that same site. And they warned that if you didn't take rapid and important measures to address safety concerns, that this sort of catastrophe could happen. So this is all the legacy of extraordinarily poor, politicized management and corruption at PDVSA. And I believe, quite frankly, that it's been conscious corruption of that institution so that it could be used for criminal ends to launder money and all of that. And also, quite frankly, just purge the place of any competent people who might also oppose Chavez's leadership. So this is Chavez's responsibility, quite frankly.
I've seen, I think, at your site, as a matter of fact, Roger Noriega, a Reuters report that put it, I thought rather elegantly, that he has placed a premium on loyalty before business prowess. And it doesn't take much of that to turn an enterprise, a highly technically complex enterprise like an oil refinery, especially a huge one, into a ticking time bomb. And I guess that's what's happened in this instance.
This looks like anybody that's a fan of mafia movies, this is sort of a mafia-style bust-out, but it just happens to be of a state-run oil company, one of the largest in the world. They're using it for political ends. They're using it to launder money. They're using it to generate tens of billions of dollars in loans that can be used, where cash can be used in the campaign that's ongoing. So it is an extraordinary scandal. It's wrecking that economy as well as the oil company.
Yeah, and obviously having a terrible effect on the people, most especially the poorest of the people, who are presumably the ones who are going to vote to reelect Chavez if he still has a base of support. What does this mean, in your estimation, Roger Noriega, for his political, assuming he physically can get to the finish line of the election, his political future?
Well, the polls have been tightening the digit gap, or that has his Democratic opponent, Enrique Capriles Radonsky, leading in point of fact. But the gap is closed considerably, and it puts him in some peril of a close election. But again, as I've said, this narco state, this corrupt bunch of Chavistas are not going to turn over power no matter what the results of the election are. So that's the real concern, and the international community seems to be totally silent on this, particularly the United States doesn't want to admit the mess that's occurring right under our noses.
Deeply troubling, needless to say. That mess is potentially going to become even more dangerous to ignore, Roger Noriega. If, as I understand it, Chavez has his way and is able to acquire what would presumably be a dramatic new threat, both to the region and certainly to our interests, in the form of sophisticated Russian fighter jets. What do we know about this prospect? Is it real? Is it a distant threat, or is it something that might actually have to be addressed much more rapidly?
Well, I think it's a serious threat. He wants to buy these Su-35 fighter jets, which would be destabilizing in the region. Potentially give him that sort of fifth-generation threat to project into the Caribbean. So I think the United States should be concerned. And Chavez has purchased up to this point about $9 billion in in Russian arms, and some of the small arms are just as much a concern to us because of it ending up in the hands of guerrillas and narco-traffickers and all of that. But it's remarkable the way the Russians, particularly Igor Sechin, who's running this for Putin, have carried out these sort of destabilizing arms sales with absolute impunity, and the United States has nothing to say about the subject. It's a very dangerous development.
It is indeed, and an egregious lapse of responsibility on the part of the current administration. Our guest, of course, again, is Roger Noriega, former ambassador to the Organization of American States and also a senior State Department official under George W. Bush. You mentioned narco-traffickers a moment ago, Roger Noriega. Let's turn to another place in which they have long operated to varying degrees with impunity, namely Colombia. There are indications, as I understand it, that both the principal trafficking organization, the FARC, and certainly the smaller of the two, the ELN, are now at some point poised to have negotiations with the government. Is this more of the kind of thing that we've seen in the past, or do you think this marks the beginning of the end of these operations?
Well, unfortunately, these folks are not going to give up their armed struggle and their very lucrative criminal enterprises. They're essentially narco organizations that have some patina of political struggle. But they're not going to give these things up unless they are really under pressure. And frankly, the current administration in Colombia under President Santos has sort of let up that pressure. If he wants to reach any sort of final agreement with these folks, it's going to have to be preceded by immense pressure against their operations, their ability to operate in the country, and quite frankly, that pressure has let up recently. I also am extraordinarily suspicious of any sort of deal brokered by Fidel Castro. This is a problem of a democratically elected president, a decent guy in Colombia that wants it too bad, who wants peace too bad, and may give away the store trying to reach that sort of elusive objective.
Very much a contrast with his predecessor, Uribe, who was definitely applying the pressure to these guys and seemingly had managed to reduce dramatically their sway over territory there, their ability to operate and threaten both the regime and others in the region. Roger Noriega, very quickly, what role are the Castro brothers playing in this?
Well, they are brokering these sort of talks between the Santos government and the FARC, and they have absolutely no good faith interest in this issue at all. They're dealing in drugs themselves, frankly, in Venezuela, from what we've heard. So they're not to be trusted, obviously.
Indeed. Roger Noriega, thank you very much for this update on what I consider to be one of the most important parts of the world, sometimes described as our backyard. I think of it as our front yard, and nobody knows it better than you, and we appreciate you sharing your insights with us, as always. Next up, we will be talking with Fred Grandy. Former Congressman Grandy will tell us what's been going on down in the Republican convention, specifically a very important piece of a new initiative for the Republican Party, American Laws for American Courts. What a concept. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder, here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it. at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Good for the Republicans. Yesterday, they unanimously adopted language Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach added to their platform. Simple, common-sense language entitled American Sovereignty in U.S. Courts. It says in part, quote, subjecting American citizens to foreign laws is inimical to the spirit of the Constitution. There must be no use of foreign law by U.S. courts in interpreting our Constitution and laws, nor should foreign sources of law be used in state courts' adjudication of criminal or civil matters, unquote. If we are truly an inclusive country, one nation truly indivisible, and the Constitution truly our supreme law, then we have an obligation to do as the Republican Party has said and ensure that the protection of our American laws is extended to all of our citizens and legal residents, period. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedomradio.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fastballing philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement. And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
We're back, joined by Fred Grandy, my colleague at the Center for Security Policy, where he is the executive vice president these days, former member of Congress, former professional talk radio show host, and our co-host here at Secure Freedom Radio. Fred, we're very glad to be able to pick your brains a little bit about the convention the Republicans are having at the moment in Tampa. I'd sort of like to get your impressions overall and talk a little bit about Chris Christie's remarks last night, but before we do that, let's talk about the platform that was adopted unanimously, and specifically a rather important piece of that platform, a plank that deals with foreign laws. Tell us what that's about and how it fits into some of the issues we address here a lot at the Center for Security Policy.
Well, the platform committee last week introduced a measure which has now been adopted by the full convention that essentially takes the language that we have advanced through the American Public Policy Alliance, the American Laws for American Courts Initiative, and of course that is now the law in Kansas and Louisiana and Tennessee and Arizona. But essentially what it says is foreign law should not and shall not prevail in American courts, whether at the federal or state level. Now, I'm paraphrasing to some degree, but really what it is a reassertion of American law being sovereign in American courts. And
which is the way it's supposed to be, isn't it?
And that's the way most people assume it is, Frank. But unfortunately, at the state level, as we know, because if you go to ShariaAndAmericanCourts.com, you're going to find 50 cases where that has been challenged, in some cases successfully, and that this is no big deal. But to the Republicans, and particularly the Platform Committee, they unanimously accepted language by the Secretary of State, Kris Kobach, Secretary of State of Kansas, I should say, that essentially reasserts the supremacy of American law. And it's not as detailed as the American Laws for American Courts statutes that we've passed, but it does put a template down, putting the GOP on record as saying, this is a common denominator of our belief in American exceptionalism. And as Kobach told me on the radio show last week when I interviewed him, he said, we'd like to see all of the states take a firm stand against Sharia law being used in their courts. And when he introduced the measure, he referred to Sharia. It's not in the statute itself, but he said, look, this is what we're trying to do here, and this is a real problem, and this is a perhaps solution to that problem. So,
well,
good news
very
for
exciting.
Us, I think.
Yeah, needless to say, I think for those of us who have been worrying about this insinuation, this creeping or stealthy civilization jihad, this is something of a well, maybe not a tipping point, but it certainly is a moment at which hopefully we will see a considerable new impetus behind the consideration. As you say, it's been adopted in 4 states, American Laws for American Courts, but I know it's been under consideration in a great many more. And with this affirmation of the principle, hopefully that will move it rather smartly through several of these other state legislatures.
Well, you would certainly hope states that have Republican majorities would be more inclined to move this. You know, last year we came close but did not prevail in Georgia and Florida and Alabama, and those states do have Republican majorities, and hopefully next session we'll have this to kind of buttress our arguments.
Yeah, I think. Fred Grandy, knowing this, business of politics as well as anybody, there is a convention to be held next week in Charlotte, North Carolina, at which the Democrats will be nominating President Obama. Do you anticipate language like this will appear in their platform as well? And shouldn't it? Because there really isn't anything partisan about this at all, I would think.
No, I don't anticipate that. And as you may know, there is, although this is not officially part of the Democratic National Committee's program for the convention, there's going to be this large, what are they calling it, a Juma in the neighborhood of Charlotte, where you've got some pretty suspect Islamists are going to be essentially staging a large rally. One of them, Sirhaj Wahaj, who is an imam in Brooklyn, but has been absolutely unremitting in his criticism of the United States and his desire to establish a caliphate here. So if that's what the Democrats want to associate with, I think it's a pretty good bet that foreign law will not prevail in their platform the way it did in the Republican.
Yeah, or more to the point, will prevail in courts if they have their way. And Fred, I it's interesting that you make this point that there's this party, Juma, as they call it, going on outside of the convention proceedings. I'm told that there is actually a fairly significant presence of Islamists inside the tent as well, though it seems as though they divide along the lines of sort of foreign Islamists will be very much inside the Democratic official events, and that these, indigenous, I guess is how they describe themselves, converts, many of them, I guess, in the prison system, but converts who will be kept at some distance. But either way, it's not the kind of company that you'd like to see a major party of the United States trafficking with, that's for sure. And more the shame if it means that they are not going to be fully supportive of having American laws prevail in American courts. Let me just back the lens up a little bit further, Fred. There's also language in the Republican platform about the Arab Spring. It sounds as though it might have been dictated by John McCain and so those who were sort of embracing rather wholeheartedly this notion that democracy will be the answer in the Middle East. What's your take on that language, and is it problematic, do you think, that it is now part of the platform?
Well, I don't think, you know, realistically, platforms are usually there to assuage delegate concerns. And I have yet to hear a Republican or a Democratic president say that I'm going to essentially legislate from the basis of my party's platform. I remember Bob Dolan in 1996 saying, that's the platform. I'm running for president. Two different things. Now, having just said we fully support the foreign law piece, there are things that we like and things that we don't like. But I have to say the Arab Spring language are the kind of nosegays that I think people like McCain and Lindsey Graham and these well-minded but I think muddle-headed members who believe that somehow if you have an election, democracy will bloom without much cultivation in places like Egypt or Tunisia or Libya or even Syria now. I just think this is a vestige of another era, Frank, and I've got to believe that if Romney and Ryan get elected, they're going to have to deal with a very hard-nosed reality in the Middle East that may include a strike by Israel and Iran within the next half year.
Yeah, well, or may even predate their arriving on the scene, should that happen.
Could possibly,
in fact,
sure.
Nosegay is an interesting term for it. We'll be looking that one up in the dictionary, Dr. Grandy. Finally, let me ask you, the high point of last night's program, I guess, was supposed to be not only Mrs. Romney giving a very moving endorsement of her husband, but Chris Christie, governor of New Jersey, speaking from the keynote podium. What did you make of his address?
I'm a little leery of Chris Christie because, as you know, he's been somewhat accommodating to Islamist influences in New Jersey and has
been
critical.
That's understating the problem.
Well, okay, I'm trying to be generous because, you know, I'm trying to believe in the big tent stuff here. But he said a couple of things that I think were important, which is America needs to be respected as opposed to loved, and I hope that translates to our efforts overseas as well as back home. From a political point of view, Frank, I have to tell you, I thought he was auditioning for 2016. This particular statement was full of I's and me's. In other words, this is what I did in New Jersey. This is what I'm going to do. I hope you stand with me, and together we'll support Mitt Romney. Okay, I can live with all of that, but I have to tell you, I mean, I watched more of the convention than just the primetime hour, and to me, the best statements, the best speeches were not Ann Romney and Chris Christie, but they were Nikki Haley, who was, of course, up endorsing the Romneys, and Arthur Davis, this former Democrat who got up and essentially stood before the delegates and said, boy, what a mistake I made in 2008. It's nice to be home. And I found that from unpartisan standpoint, somebody just watching said, that's probably more compelling than what either Christie or Ann Romney said.
Well, let's hope that it has the desired effect. Fred Grandy, as always, thank you so much for joining us, for your superb work at the Center for Security Policy, and for your sharing this microphone with me, especially on Fridays. And we'll talk with you again this Friday.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy. Eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff, like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Jim Hansen, our boots on the ground guy, a former special operator in the United States Army who joins us each week to talk a bit about how the highfalutin policy issues that we spend a lot of our time talking about translate into the state and the fate of our troops. Jim, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you as always.
Good to be here, Frank.
Speaking of our troops, one of the stories that Rowan Scarborough has been covering, I think, very well in the Washington Times is the story of a program called Palantir, which seems like a really remarkable sort of data mining and exploitation technology developed in the private sector, but being applied with considerable effect where possible to help our troops anticipate and counter the threat of improvised explosive devices in Afghanistan at the moment. The Army, though, isn't so keen on it. Jim, what's going on here, and is this sort of symptomatic of a larger problem, and what should we be doing about it?
You know, nine times out of ten, I'm willing to jump on a bureaucracy and say that they're doing things inefficiently and basically will be inertia as opposed to a force for good. And I think there's definitely some of that going on in this case. You know, Palantir is an innovative company. They've got a disruptive technology that does some very good things. But the Army has a responsibility to generate systems that work together. You know, if they bought just everything piecemeal and threw it out there, you end up with stuff that doesn't work together, and you can't build the bigger systems that actually generate, you know, the kind of strategic goal as opposed to just a tactical fix for one thing. So I think the Army's caught in a bad situation right now because Palantir is a cool technology. It does some excellent things, but it does a smaller set of things than the system the Army needs to do the kind of battlefield intelligence overall. So you've got people saying, all right, the bigger system isn't ready. It doesn't work. It doesn't do this piece that Palantir does. And the, you know, the troops are saying, we want to use this. And the Army's saying, if we just buy this and throw away our larger system, we end up with a less efficient battlefield intelligence overall. So there's a bit of catch-22. It is absolutely a great technology. It just is a smaller piece than I think, you know, the entire system that the Army wants to deploy.
Yeah.
So, I wish.
Jim Henson, it sounds like this comes down to a case of the best being the enemy of the good enough. And I guess I just wonder whether we're winding up needlessly having kids killed because, you know, the big Army has got in mind a big solution to the problem, but it's not quite ready and it's not here. Does that trouble you that you say, sort of a catch-22, I get that, but that in the interim, we ought to be using, for what seems to be a negligible cost, something that might be sufficient to help get us through to the big solution being available?
You know, probably yes. And that's like why I said, it's not in my nature to normally defend, you know, a large bureaucracy, a large clunky acquisition process. And that's the politest word I could use, you know, for the military's acquisition process. It's difficult. It's a slow and horrifyingly bad way to get the troops exactly what they need when they need it. And in this case, I think the right answer probably is to be buying at least some software from Palantir, deploying it and just taking the hit to the strategic vision they have for a better system in the interest of making sure, you know, that we're doing everything we can right now. So I wish we could, you know, just magic away a better way to do acquisitions that would get that done all the time. But if somebody has figured that out, I haven't met them yet.
Well, it's a subject for another day's conversation, that's for sure. Jim Henson is our guest. He comes to us from Absio.com, his day job. He also is associated with a terrific website representing our forces in the field, Black5.net. Jim, one of the things that our forces in the field have been doing lately is training a small number of Russian troops in what's known as mountaineering familiarization and parachute training. The question occurs, I get that this is being done in the sort of larger context of the reset of relations with the Russians. Is there reason to be concerned that we are, in fact, perhaps equipping people who may or may not be adversaries of ours, but certainly have been known to be threatening to some of our friends, notably most recently, I guess, Georgia, in the Caucasus, with capabilities that we just as soon not have them have?
You know, Frank, got a cop to one thing. I helped train the Russians at one point back quite a while ago. This is not a new thing. Back in the 90s, we were making friends with them again when the wall came down and all that kind of good stuff was going on. The Spetsnaz, same guys, and Army Special Forces did some joint training. You know, and it's designed, it's a way to kind of put your toe in the water with somebody you may not be friends with, but you're no longer enemies with. And it's a fairly common thing that happens between us and Army Special Forces. That's one of the missions. We go make friends. We did it, and when the bases closed in the Philippines, we went to Malaysia and made friends with them there and Singapore so we could get new bases there. So when we have people who we have a tense or a somewhat testy relationship with, instead of having open, you know, full diplomatic relations, a lot of times we will start with some joint military training, you know, where they'll teach us, like in the case of the Spetsnaz, they were teaching us hatchet throwing, You know, I don't know if you've ever seen, there's a great picture on the internet of a Spetsnaz guy doing a backflip and throwing a hatchet at a target. And they actually taught us some of that, and we taught them some of the same mountaineering techniques.
Well, here's my question.
Not new.
No. I get that it's not new. And I get that there are circumstances into which you might want to do this. And it certainly seems to me that when we look back at the glory days of the post, you know, Cold War, the wall coming down, the hopes for Yeltsin and democracy and so on, that one might well have thought this was a moment in which you want to try to increase those relationships and build more, not just in the military to military sphere, but more generally, Jim. But this is now, not then. And it seems to me that the circumstances here are much, much harder to argue, are really in our interest to be fostering those kinds of, transfers of knowledge that, maybe in a microcosmic sense, not gonna, you know, make a huge amount of difference, but still, is ill-advised.
First thing I'll say is I don't trust Putin at all. I think he is definitely a megalomaniac, and that the Russians are definitely expanding operations and going to cause us trouble. So no question that he's doing that. I guess the question from our perspective, from a strategic standpoint, is do we engage with them and try the, you know, the nicey nice, or do we play hardball with them? I would probably be on the same side of the fence with you and say hardball is probably the right answer, but I can at least understand that if you're going to try to engage at all and reset your reset, which, you know, obviously the first time didn't go so well, then this would be a method to do it. And, Whether that's a good idea, I think I would say probably it's not going to work. Okay, we could say that. You know, I don't think there's much chance at all of it working. Putin's not going to be a friend of ours ever.
Yeah.
So,
well, there's the rub, and we'll be watching closely what happens as a result of this exercise, but more generally this reset. Jim, very quickly, we got a minute left or so. Can you just tell us your thoughts on the findings with respect to dereliction of duty in respect to the Koran burnings?
Kind of sadly what I expected. You know, I mean, once this hit the big news wires and everyone became outraged by the outrageous outrage of it, something was going to happen. I don't think this is, you know, it's not, these guys aren't getting thrown in Leavenworth to make little rocks out of big rocks, but I don't think the punishment fits the crime, if there was a crime even committed. So,
Jim, we have to let it go with that. I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah, and it's something of a travesty here, really, that we're, I think, submitting to this crazy doctrine. And we'll be talking more with you about this, I know, in the future. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll look forward as well to speaking with the rest of you again tomorrow. I hope same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.